At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Kathleen here with Luke, Jimmy, and producer Dave. Today, we're going to be covering Season 7, Episode 5 of the CW show, The 100, titled Welcome to Bardo. I think this episode was freaking incredible. We got a lot of answers that were posed last season, this season. What do you guys think?
I liked it a lot. I don't know if it was better than Episode 2, because Episode 2 was pretty wild.
Yeah.
But we'll get into it a little bit later. This episode cleared up a couple of plot holes that were bothering me real hard. So that's a kudos to the writers because it's pretty early to start fixing some of the things that they're establishing early in this season. So I thought it was a great episode overall.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to say the same thing. Episode 2 was still my favorite episode of the season. But because they answered so much, the Bardo stuff was the best stuff, obviously. I went did the Twitter poll on Bingetown TV Twitter, and a lot of people did actually say best of the season or great. So everyone pretty much agrees that this is a really good episode.
It's so weird to me that this is kind of like the first season where the group is so split up and in such specific groups, like they're not really crossing over yet. It's just weird that you can have a favorite episode that doesn't have either of the main characters. I mean, shout out to Bellamy for making his first appearance, but that didn't count. Like, Clark wasn't in this, Raven wasn't in this, Bellamy wasn't in this. It's just weird season.
Yeah, I mean, this season I think is very, we've obviously seen them separated before. Like, that would be season 5, I would say. But this one is, totally different storylines in a way where it's, we don't even have time to bring Clark's storyline up yet. We'll get to that next episode,
Well, there's three specific storylines now. There was the Bardo and the Sanctum, or the Alpha, and now it's Bardo, Alpha, and now Clark and company in Nakara. So, this season needed 16 episodes.
Yeah.
They couldn't, with these crazy storylines, they could not have done it in the
regular
13.
It's going to feel like the Avengers when they all finally are in the same scene again. It's going to be
The 100 Endgame.
Yep.
We're not getting that to, if we get that before the halfway point, there's no way, right?
I know. And we said it while we were watching, but no Maddie again.
Right, no Maddie.
She's the only one that isn't getting much. I mean, and we also said Dioza's only been in one episode. I might be talking out of my ass there, but I think Dioza's only been in one, too.
Dioza was like that last season as well. I think there at some point comes into play, the TV logistics of it being a regular versus a guest star.
Yeah.
Because I think that Maddie falls under that. I even think Indra falls under that.
Mm-hmm.
But I read an article a while ago saying Jason has been trying to get Indra to be a regular forever for multiple seasons, but there's something to do with the perks of being a not regular.
She's also on other shows.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well deserved being in it. I'm so happy she's been in more this season though.
Yeah, she was an MVP this episode, and we'll get to that.
Yeah. Later. So speaking of that, we're gonna start with the Bardo storyline in chronological order, just so it is easier to comprehend, and then we'll shift to the Sanctum storyline. Ready to roll?
Let's do it.
All right, so 45 days ago. So we open at Octavia and Dioza getting taken into Bardo from Beta, which is where the episode 2 ends. So we get our first look at the planet. We know they're way more high tech, but nothing out of this world. When I'm looking at Bardo, I'm not whoa!
Yeah.
But we know it's inhabitable, so that's why everything, even the outdoor place is indoor.
Right.
I didn't know what to expect when last episode, when we got Orlando to actually say the words that, it's a fortress. So I didn't know what to expect. Grounder-style fortress would look way different than future tech-style fortress,
which is
what we're getting here. And I'm happy we're getting that.
Mount Weather Fortress could,
exactly.
I was expecting something insane. I mean, their technology is awesome.
Yeah.
Super dope.
It was more likely that it was going to be advanced.
Exactly.
Yeah, and give Octavia, our girl, some props, man. She was on Beta for 10 years, chilling, kicked the shit out of all these
guys,
riding
a bike.
Yeah.
So,
they're supposed to be warriors. I mean, was that our assumption, or was that...
No, they say that.
Yeah, I mean...
Also, while they are warriors, how are you going to, like, Octavia is, like, a top-tier warrior in any society. It doesn't matter. She's going to kick the shit out of everybody.
True. That's crazy to think about. Damn. Okay, so yeah, we see Octavia kick ass and evade capture like a badass she is, and then eventually she gets captured and put into MCAP, which is where we stay for the next 10, 11, 15 days.
Right.
Or so.
Something we get confirmed pretty early in this scene is that if you are resisting MCAP, and it's memory capture, right? Mm-hmm. If you resist it on a high enough frequency, which I think is the equivalent of strength. So high enough strength, it will actually lobotomize you or cause you to have a hemorrhage, which basically just makes you, it just kills you essentially.
Right.
So yeah, we get that confirmed here and we start to see a little bit of what it's like to go through this. Cause we've been talking about this for 3-4 episodes and we just assume that the people of Bardo got a lot of information from Octavia and Dioza, and wrongfully we did assume that Bellamy went through it too. And that's how we thought that the Bardoan, or I guess the disciples, got all this information. But
yeah, so in this scene, we're introduced to both Anders and Levitt, two great characters who we're going to move forward with.
For different reasons, great characters.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anders is our big bad for the rest of the season, because hopefully Shane Hata just beats it. And then Levitt is like another great example of the Hundred Riders like doing the most with the character in one episode. I'm like in love with him already. It's crazy.
He's going to be our next interview.
Yeah, I mean, he's literally us. He's a metaphor for us.
Exactly.
He's literally watching the 100 via Octavia's mind.
And he's rooting. Like, and when she stabs Pike.
Not yet.
Oh, it's so good. Okay, so at this point, she is, for 11 days, she's fighting it. He's getting bits and pieces, little by little, he's getting information. He says the word hope in a sentence, which triggers her to think of hope. Which is obviously she does not want them to know that she's on penance or beta. So she makes a deal with him to say, I'll tell you everything, just scratch hope from your notes. So
This is 11 days in. And from what we see later in this episode, like 11 days of just resisting this machine is intense. Like that's a huge mental toll on Octavia, which goes to show even further how even though she spent 10 peaceful years on beta, she was still always just like, you know, she still all had all this training in the back of her head ready to go.
Right.
It's so nice seeing Levitt, like, love Octavia like we do. And I know, like, we keep bringing up that she needed this crazy redemption story because of how bad she got. But, like, he's watching her in, like, movie style for 3 days. And, of course, he's going to, like, fall. Like, this is such a good, it's literally us. We love Octavia so much. We would do anything for Octavia. Like, 3 days in, he's ready to, like, just all of his ideals out the window for Octavia.
Because he knows that the One crew is, most of them are coming from a genuinely good place. And the point that he gets to when he's rewatching her memories isn't far enough, like Octavia later says, you haven't even gotten to Blood Raina yet.
Right.
And before that point, even though they were doing some messed up stuff, everything was kind of like, they were fighting against Grounders, against Mount Weather people. What they were doing was justified, and they came off as good people, and obviously Levitt saw that. I did want to also point out that I don't know how canon we can take this, but when you pause the screen and look at Levitt's face, he does have at least 12 markings on his face. So I think we can safely assume that he's a level 12 disciple, meaning he had as much information as is available. Like he's the top tier along with Orlando, who we met last episode.
RIP. Maybe. Not. Right. Allegedly. Okay, so now we get this dope, like, Hope Dioza fake out. Dioza, allegedly again, walks in with the suit on and holds a knife to Levitt's throat. And then we find out it is Hope, and it's so sweet. I love it. And this is, this timeline is right after Dev dies. So she would have hopped through and she's coming straight in. So that's how that's.
And that's where, Luke, you caught that it might be an error with Hope's tattoos, right? If we're going by what you said. Because the tattoos still look like she would. Her face is what Orlando tattooed.
Well, no, I don't know. Like, I don't know that we're saying it's an error, but we're just saying that why would Dev fake her out to be a level 12 when he was only a 7? Like, he couldn't even train her past that.
Okay,
so
I thought you meant
it?
Like it was a timeline error where they gave her the 12.
We'd
too
have
early.
To look.
Yeah.
We'd have to go back and see like what was on her face when Dev dies.
Right.
Because that also would have been there in the season finale of last season. We would have also had the same amount, but who knows how consistent they were there.
Yeah.
Right.
I swear, I don't know why, but she does look different in the finale. Like, of course, it's like probably months in between and different days and makeup days, but I'm like, wow, she looks younger for some reason.
So the next scene we get is them escaping from the MCAP room, being Hope, Levitt, and Octavia, and they're making their way to the Anomaly Stone Room. And in this scene, we get a lot of information to digest. And this is what I mentioned earlier. We get a little bit of a cleanup for some of the plot holes and questions I had from earlier episodes.
So Hope wants Octavia to go. She wants to send her, but Levitt's saying, okay, do the time dilation. If Octavia goes through without a mask, she's going to forget everything. But Hope's like, well, I need the mask to be able to ghost out so I can go get Mom. And it's really emotional. Yeah. It's like they don't know what to do and the time's running out.
So let's back up a little bit and look at Levitt's actual quote. So what he does say is that jumping to a slower time dilation planet causes you to lose your memory. So what this is basically means to us is that Alpha is confirmed to be slower time dilation than Bardo. Alpha is also a slower time dilation to Beta. And so what that means is that if you're on Alpha Sanctum and you're leaving by Anomaly, you'll never need a mask. You'll never need the helmet because everything else is faster time dilation relative to your planet.
As far as we know.
As far as we know. Which explains earlier in the season, you know, when we got Hope, Gabriel, and Echo going from Alpha to Beta, they didn't need the helmets. They didn't have any issues with their memory loss.
And it also explains why, like you were saying last episode, we don't have to be pissed anymore that Clark and them didn't lose their memory.
Exactly. So that's given us a little more that the planet that Clark and them go to have a faster time dilation than Alpha, and pretty much everything does. I think it's safe to assume that Alpha has the slowest time dilation, meaning it's the closest to the black hole. Another thing to note is that I think, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think this also explains why anytime we've seen prisoners getting dropped off at Beta from Bardo directly, they don't need helmets because they don't need to, because, you know, they're going from Bardo to a faster time dilation in Beta. So that's why we didn't see Dev have a helmet.
They need to remember
what
they did.
Orlando have a helmet. Exactly.
They need to repent.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Exactly.
Yep.
So that's why, like, you know, Orlando had all the memories of Bardo and all that.
And then it's also a thing that if you come back to the normal dilation, you get your memories back.
You'll remember it, right. And Levitt also confirmed that for us, which is cool. Because a lot of this was just, like, nitpicking. I thought it was nitpicking, but this does clear up a couple of inconsistencies in the first couple episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, when I was listening to your guys' episode last week, I don't think it was nitpicking at all, wondering why Clark and them didn't lose, you know, that
there's
was
just
that
100 wrong things with them just like being like, let's go.
Yeah, I mean, that I totally agree. And but I just think that, you know, I'm glad that they gave us that answer.
Sure.
Two other questions we now have left to be answered about the jumping between different planets is we still kind of have some questions about the bags, like bringing bags to places.
Yeah.
We're going to find out next episode if anyone in Clark's group has anything on
We're
this new planet, I'm pissed. Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I'm going to be pissed. And the second one is Octavia's arm from last season. So what we know, or remember, is Octavia was on Sanctum, on Planet Alpha with Dioza and Gabriel at the time. And I think, like, the anomaly was just, like, they knew for some reason the anomaly was coming, so they had to get out of the way, and what they were in was, like, quicksand or something like that?
Yeah, she was submerged and only her arm was sticking out.
Right, and so just her arm was sticking out when the anomaly flew over them and basically just aged her arm.
Right, so it messed it up, and now we talked it out and we're guessing maybe fossilized it, aged it, something. I mean, they don't ever say that, but that's what we're going with.
The first scene when we see Octavia, which is directly after her getting sucked up into the anomaly,
It's healed in already. Beta, yeah.
Yeah, so they might not even touch it.
The question is the anomaly healing?
Which would be a big problem because we know it doesn't heal Hope's arm.
But, and like I said, if the anomaly is healing, when Hope went back, it was because someone pulled her via her code from Octavia's tattoo.
Which could negate the healing.
So the anomaly, the stones, tag, is there different properties that happen with each one is the second question, and we might never know.
Yeah. And let's not hope that there is it, because that's too complicated.
So another reveal we get is the biocode reveal. So Levitt comes to the conclusion, oh, this was here before we were here. The like stick,
the wand,
the magic wand. Yeah. So he scans Hope's eyes, and the biocode. We were always wondering, how the fuck do you get a biocode?
Right,
and that's exactly how. So that's awesome. And then you also get the reveal of that's how the tattoo got on Octavia's back.
And also this pretty much confirms that the disciples never really travel with biocodes anymore. Like he basically was just like looking at this older
ancient
piece
technology.
Of technology and being like, yeah, it only works 8 out of 10 times, I think he said, something like that.
He said we stopped using it because it only works 8 out of 10 times.
And they can also use the stone other ways, like they don't need the biocodes.
It makes more sense now because when we saw how Raven accessed it, she was looking at planetary codes and like how to put them into the stone instead of like that. Kind of always confused me a little bit, like what was the purpose of the biocodes if you could always just have the helmets that could just read the planet? But this was good. No, that was
imagine if you're like minding your own fucking business, someone just types your code in and you're just like, fuck, dude, now I'm on a different planet. It's insane. And then the last question that's answered is Levitt's the one who puts the note in Hope's arm.
Right.
Which is cool. Oh, I guess that's not... Yeah. He does say it in that.
He does, yeah. And the reason... It's kind of cool that we find out the reason that he put, like, trust Bellamy is because he had the opportunity to live Octavia's first 4 seasons of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he trusted Bellamy just as much as he wanted her to trust Bellamy because he knew who Bellamy was.
We trust Bellamy.
We trust Bellamy.
Oh, I was happy to see his face.
I miss you, Bob.
I know. We miss Bob. Okay, so now chronologically, we're at the 7 days ago mark, and we don't see what happens with Hope in between Octavia being sent to Sanctum and Hope doing Ander's bidding, quote unquote, to tag Octavia. So at this point, she's bleeding because Levitt puts the note in her arm, and then she gets pulled to Alpha via Gabriel with the biocode on Octavia's back. And soon as she gets pulled, Anders is like, she's dangerous, and that's why she had a kill on sight. When in episode 1, when we saw through the mask of the
And just to reiterate, because she went from Bardo to Alpha, that's going from to a slower time dilation. That's why both her and
Octavia
both just didn't have any part of their memory until
except
they went back.
Except for when the anomaly was above their head, they remembered for a second.
Yes, yeah. and then as soon as you know in the episode 2, as soon as they go back to Beta. Is when Hope gets all of her memory back. Is what you were saying earlier. You do gain the memory back.
Right. She gets everything back, and Echo and Gabriel are like, yo, hook us up here.
Yeah, tell us some things.
It's kind of crazy that technically Anders had no idea when Hope was going to get pulled. Because it's like on Alpha, they had to figure out. Octavia had to take her shirt off. Someone had to notice it. Gabriel himself had to be the one to notice it because he's been studying the anomaly stone for that many years. Like a perfect amount of events, like this, a perfect storm.
Literally about to say the same exact thing.
Yeah.
And Levitt that question was brought up, and Levitt's like, we don't have time to worry about all these problems, like one problem at a time. And that was obviously a concern for them. He's like, you're not going to remember. We just have to hope that someone, you know, I would have just sent her out without the shirt. She's good, right?
Yeah.
Like, what are they going to do?
Yeah. So now this is the finale timeline. So Hope just got back, stabs Octavia, and then Octavia comes back. She gets pulled by the locator tag.
Right.
So now she's in MCAP again, and this is where enter Bellamy.
Let go,
right?
And I think this is technically still a couple days before quote unquote present day.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's the last thing that happens before Hope, Gabriel, and Echo walk into Bardo. You're right, yeah. So we get the crazy Bellamy scene here, right?
Yep.
Is this when we find out that Bellamy died?
Come
on. This is episode five, yeah.
Yeah. But again, she makes another deal. Like everyone's just making deals to save people, but Octavia especially, she makes another deal with Anders to say, save Bellamy, and that's when the guy pulls the bomb.
Right.
It wasn't, I thought that was just like an okay scene. Like as much as I'm like, that wasn't the reunion I wanted for Octavia and Bellamy, but.
Yeah, I agree, and obviously he's not dead. And
no.
The other thing is, you know, we don't know where he went. He obviously, again, didn't go back to Sanctum. That would be too much. We would know that if that happened. So I guess his journey is going to be getting back from wherever he went.
And also, the energy wouldn't have been reciprocated from Bellamy's side if, like, for that reunion of Octavia and Bellamy, because from Bellamy's perspective, I don't think much time has passed.
No.
Right.
But obviously, Octavia is out here living 10 years
plus.
10
years plus
the torturing.
Now.
Yeah. Like, a lot of stuff is going on. So I guess that reaction wasn't, I agree with you, it wasn't exactly what I expected, but it also makes a little bit of sense from the Bellamy side. He was in a high-pressure situation. He wasn't about to, oh my God, baby sister!
I know, but like all the seasons and every show I've ever watched, like the reunions are what you watch for.
It's coming. We're getting that Avengers scene, I'm telling you.
I mean, let's talk again, though, because we brought Octavia up earlier saying, you know, all for 10 years, chilling with her girls, comes in and kicks some ass. Mm-hmm. Bellamy... These are warriors. He's not, like, actually trained as a warrior.
Well,
fight.
Let's go back, because for 6 years in space, all they did was train.
He did train with Echo all the time.
Because if you, a little quick down memory lane, when he's fighting Octavia at some point, and she's like, you fight like as Gaeta.
Yes. Okay, so I was going to say, I was so happy that he kicked their ass, but I was a little like...
character development there.
Yeah, exactly.
Love that.
Great.
I mean, I just remember when I rewatched thinking that was so badass of Octavia being like, you fight like she literally knows how each of the crews would fight.
That's
like,
great.
It's so awesome. But I think we're done on this one. We can hop to the present.
I think it's time to get to the part where Hope and Echo and Gabriel walk through the anomaly on Bardo.
Yeah, and that's badass too. I mean, they jump in, and I like that line where one of the girls killed someone, and Gabriel automatically assumes it's freaking Echo, and she's like, it wasn't me.
But then Echo is out here slitting throats.
It's not
even slitting throats. She just like pushes the knife into the neck. That sound it makes too.
You know what
it
reminded me of is back to season one when they kill Adam. When Clark kills Adam, just slips it into his neck.
That's exactly how Wells dies too. It just kind of just goes right into his neck by that little bitch Charlotte.
Yeah, because Charlotte would know where the karate was. Yeah. I actually think Bellamy might have explained that to her. Like, now that I'm thinking about it, it doesn't matter, but yeah. So, I wanted to talk quick about, they kill everybody in there, and so Gabriel is pissed that that Echo killed everybody except Orlando, and he says it's more of a risk leaving him there than taking him with us. And then he says, what are we going to do without an inside man?
Right,
because that's how they train.
Right, they train for 5 years with Orlando as part of the plan.
Right, but then Echo and Hope look at each other and know that they have Levitt. So I'm like, why wouldn't Gabriel know about Levitt? Like, I'm like, it's because Hope and Echo are kissing on the side.
But also, didn't Hope express concern that there's a chance that Levitt might not be there, right?
She does right after.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so maybe that's why right away, like, Hope was just like, oh, we might not be there. Because if he's not there, what are the chances? You don't know how much time is really...
Just mean, like, shouldn't Gabriel have known that they do know somebody in
there? Yes, yeah, you're right.
But he's not readily available like Orlando would have been to get them through this 30 minutes.
Echo knew, like... Echo's the one who says it. Hope's not even the one who says it. Echo's the one who's like, we do know somebody, basically. And she's like, I don't know if he's in MCAT.
Weird writing, whatever. Moving on.
I guess.
So then we get a little bit of a transition scene where we have Hope, Echo, and Gabriel walking to the MCAT room. They have the suits on, like they have the masks on. They're playing soldiers. So they're making their way to the MCAT room. And as soon as they get to it, they get called out by another disciple. And he's like, you know, that girl or guy was just like, stand in line, come over here, whatever. So they have to play the part. They start grouping up with the other disciples.
Tick, tick, tick.
And it's time to go to a ceremony that's happening on planet Bardo. Now, this scene, we get a lot of information. And a lot of it's subtle. Like, you honestly need to read the subtitles because they're getting blocked out by the dialogue. But we picked up a bunch of things here. So one of the things I noticed right away is every time that the disciples, specifically Anders as well, talk about Shepard, they talk about him in present tense. So one of the lines is like, Shepard will save us, will, future tense, save us from the war to end all wars. So I think that gives a little bit more credence to what we talked about last episode. I think I brought up on that map that they had, there's this little chamber, this little part of the Bardo fortress that was marked as Shepard Cryolab. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we were kind of just spitballing talking about is there's definitely a chance that Shepard, the person that brought everyone to Bardo, is in that cryo lab waiting to be woken up for this final war. And so that would kind of make sense to why they all the people on Bardo hail him as like a godlike figure, and they're like waiting to wake him up for this exact thing. I just thought that was like, I hope that's what it is. I thought that was awesome. Yeah, did you guys pick up on them talking about Shepard like that in present future tense?
Hell yeah, and I agree with you completely. I think that's what, and it's nice that we saw that on the map, because if we didn't see Shepard cryo, like we wouldn't.
Yeah, that wouldn't be pieced together. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, I really did need the second watch with the subtitles to catch what you were saying about his speech. Like that whole speech in the first watch through kind of went right in and out, because it's being blocked out. They're showing a scene and he's just on the PA system in another area before they walk in.
That's also, that just reminded me, is when Anders gets introduced to the speaking portion where he's giving out this ceremonious speech. The reason he's even talking in the first place, like Anders specifically, is because he is referred to as Anders the First Disciple. We have no idea what that means, but I'm sure we're going to find out. Like, there could be a chance, there could be some tie-in with the mind drives, how maybe he was the first one there and could be Shepard himself, just reincarnated. There's a lot of conjecture when you're thinking about why he's the First Disciple.
We also get confirmation that it is not the Allegis. They are not from Allegis 3, and that there is a stone on Earth, which just changes the game. But we guessed that.
We knew the stone was on Earth, but that was the confirmation, pretty much, besides, you know, the mask.
What Anders specifically says is that the original Bardoans, which we've been saying Bardoites, and I like that way better, but the original Bardoans went extinct by Gen 9 by the time that the Shepherd brought the disciples there. So what that tells us, two separate species has lived on planet Bardo. The original ones that were there, wiped out by whatever Gen 9 is, and I'm sure we're going to find out more about that as the episodes are going on. And then we also know that it's looking more and more likely, like, basically Gabriel confirms that the disciples are from Earth. They used the anomaly stone to come here post extinction of the original Bardoans.
Cue Luke's theory of Bill Cadogan.
Yeah, okay, so all right, I'm going to go on a little tangent here. I know I talk about this a lot, but it's looking more and more likely, so I'm feeling good about myself, you know?
You heard it here first.
Yeah, all right. Really.
So I'm going to back us up to talking again about Second Dawn Cole and Bill Cadogan, which if you haven't heard my explanation on that, go back to episode 2 is when we talked about that,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, and last episode.
Right, yeah. You talked about it last episode as well.
Yeah, so I was just trying to work the year numbers to make sure that it was even theoretically possible for Bill Cadogan to have brought the Second Dawn Cult to planet Bardo. So some things that we know are that the Allegis 3 was on Bardo before the Disciples. We kind of just talked about that a little bit. Now I'm going to bring us all the way back to the Earth years real quick. So Bill Cadogan killed Becca Franco 2 years after the Earth apocalypse happened. And the only reason that's important is just to get a frame of reference of how many years have passed. So that was in the year of 2054 from the 100 Wikipedia. So that's pretty much where I'm getting these numbers from. So yeah, 2054. So in between when Bill Cadogan kills Becca and when Binge Crew arrives on Alpha is 227 years. So basically the takeaway of that is if Bill Cadogan had access to the Anomaly Stone and used it relatively close to right after Becca Franco died, the numbers work, because the Allegis 3 could have been the first people that were on Bardo, and that was the race that originally went extinct. And because of the time gap of that 227 years, that would have been 227 years that the disciples, basically the Second Dawn cult that Bill brings over with the Anomaly Stone, they would have had that 227 years of technological growth on top of what was already left there, which they said a couple times in this episode, there was technology here when we got here. So they grow from that, right? And then also, when you take into account the slower time dilation of Bardo relative to Alpha, that gives us even more of a reason of why there would have been such a discrepancy between how far Russell Lightborn got versus how advanced the disciples got. They basically had hundreds and hundreds of more years to advance along the timeline. And if they had access to mind drive technology, there's no reason that Bill Cadogan's Second Dawn cult couldn't have been the originators of this species that we have today.
My brain just
am I just spitting shit? Like, is any of this?
I love it. I mean, tinfoily as fuck, and yeah. I think it all tracks.
Jason Rothenberg, eat your heart out.
Yeah, exactly.
Basically, all this is to say is that Bill Cadogan is the goddamn shepherd. So, like, that's
exactly.
it. And if that's true,
Bingetown TV episode 2, 3, 4, all of them. Luke says it.
Yes, and I will keep saying it. I will keep saying it as we get more and
that
more
was
evidence.
A mouthful, Luke.
I'm sorry. That's my tangent.
No, I love it. I love it. The disciples are literally just a cult. Like Anders even mentions to Hope, or after Hope goes, or actually when
Dorn,
Hope is still there,
yeah.
he's like he says something like, "This is what happens when you think about one person
instead of
the group or the collective." And then she's like, "It's called love, you son of a bitch."
Mm-hmm.
I love it. But this is when, so Hope like is like, I don't know, gonna kill Anders, like a wacko. Like, what are you gonna do, kill Anders in front of all of these people? Like, she's like creeping up so mad.
That was another example of Hope almost blowing the whole plan for everybody.
Dev got killed.
She made Echo have to kill the first disciple that came when Orlando was there. Yeah. That's three times.
I don't know. I love Hope so much. She's my girl.
Yeah.
But so then they end up creeping to the MCAP. It's not Levitt there. So Echo's like threatening him and is like, "Where's Bellamy? Where's her brother?" And we see the death, quote unquote, and Echo just absolutely loses her fucking mind. And meanwhile, Octavia, what is she repeating over and over again?
I'm
not
afraid.
I'm not afraid. And it's like, oh, she's zonked.
Yeah,
she is a zombie.
That's
zombie.
Also, I just thought of this right now, a throwback to what Bellamy tells Charlotte to say in her head when she stabs
yep.
Wells. She's
mm-hmm.
like, I'm not afraid, which is what he was telling Octavia when they were kids, too. So
yep.
just thought of that. It's awesome.
I love it.
That.
Too many callbacks. It's the best.
I mean, we literally got to see Pike for a hot second.
Mm-hmm.
We got to see Lincoln, which I was pretty surprised they put his actor in there at all.
Yeah, I mean, they literally, you know, they say, like, who puts their hand out for you? And Lincoln shows up.
I know.
Mean,
honestly, R.I.P. Like, if I'm in therapy and somebody says that, you're gonna think of somebody.
Oh, yeah.
That's like an awesome technique. I was like, damn, that's fucking
sly. Yeah, it's like when you say, don't think of a gray elephant, you're gonna think
yeah.
of a gray elephant.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah. So Echo's going nuts and she's beating the shit out of this guy, and Hope and Gabriel are like, we need him to be able to find Dioza, and she just takes that fucking thing and destroys him and he's dead, and Hope's like, we're never gonna find my mom now, and that's kind of where it cuts out, and it's pretty epic. But there's Echo just being absolutely like
reckless. She doesn't
yeah.
ice cold
at all,
oh
man.
My gosh,
okay. Both.
Well, yeah it's both, and that's her like as Gaeta, like whatever. But the one thing we didn't really touch on this episode yet is that Anders keeps saying Clark is the key. We know that Clark is what he wants, and it's like, after the incredible showing we get from Octavia, Echo, Hope, and all these newcomers, it's kind of annoying that Clark is still the key. But it's like, I love Clark, so of course she's the fucking key. But it's like, it's cool to me that like this season we have so many fucking awesome characters that could be the lead of the show. This Clark could have died last season and we would be having the same exact show.
Yeah, I'm really interested to see what makes her the key compared to anybody else.
My guess is, I think I was probably reading some former, like an article, maybe it was Reddit or something. I think like there's a chance that it could have to do with the fact that she's had the flame, the neural network.
Yeah.
Like, she's had everything that you could have. She's a knight, but like she's pretty much like, I don't know, they give her everything. So if there's some sort of connection to actually mind drives on Bardo, then maybe they're trying to figure out a way to, like, I don't know, like the flame. Maybe they're trying to make someone everlasting longer. I don't know.
Yeah, it has to be something like that, because it can't just be like a personality trait or something.
I mean, I love Clark to death, so whatever it is, it's fine. But I was just trying to make the point that we have such a deep bench on this show. Like, so many talented actors and amazing characters with these, like, arcs that were incredible. I'm so sad. We keep saying it, but I'm so sad that this is the last season. They are just setting it up for 100 more seasons, no pun intended.
I was thinking about it earlier. I'm a little bit happy after we're getting into the season that it is ending, because if they did decide to go full complicated sci-fi concepts like we're doing this season, and they had to flesh that out over like four seasons. The plot holes were going to be there. The fact that it's going to be short, sweet, we're going to cover all of the Allegis 3 information we need to with the planets that they found and stuff in this one contained season, it just kind of makes everything... That's why every episode's been so good so far, is because it's short, sweet. A lot of information that could have been four seasons is going to be shoved into one. And that's why so far this season's 10 out of 10. I'm loving it.
I know. And I can't see this ending and me being disappointed, and knock on wood, but I am just so glad that they're doing this season right. We deserve it.
I think we do.
It needs to end right. It needs to end right.
Okay, so I think we're good on the Bardo, so let's get into everyone's favorite, Sanctum. But I actually liked this one, and we probably spent a collective 10 minutes of the episode in Sanctum, so it's really not that much.
This was definitely the best Shade Hada we've seen so far this season.
Exactly, great acting by J.R.
Another shout out to J.R. Bourne,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, he's a fantastic actor. Ugh.
Ever since Jimmy said the thing about the original Shade Hada just being so, like, white bread boring, I was like, I didn't think about that. I just hated Shade Hada, and I thought I hated him because I was just not interested, but you're so right.
He's like, just a vanilla villain.
Yeah,
like, literally.
He was. Like, oh, my God.
They added a little bit more flavor with his conversation with Indra, and we'll get to that in a little bit.
Well, no, but we're saying now that he's J.R. Bourne.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
we're
talking
last season with Maddie.
Gotcha. I thought you meant his personality, like his actual character's background and stuff. Like that.
I will say that this season Shade Hada is more interesting than last season Shade Hada. I couldn't care less with Maddie and Shade Hada, like, truly.
Same.
And compared to Bardo, I really couldn't care less about Shade Hada anymore. But this episode, I was like, okay, sure, let's see this play out, and I'll take anything where I can see Murphy shirtless.
I was gonna say Murphy's just gonna hold it down there because he's still a binge crew favorite, and you know.
Well, we were worried about who was left and being like, what is? We knew that this episode was gonna have some like Sanctum centric plot lines, and we were like, okay, it's just Murphy and Amori and Indra, but it ended up being really good. So we get the Sanctum storyline, and it starts with the Faithful, quote-unquote, which is what we call the Sanctumites is what we've been calling them, but it's the Faithful led by Trey. So we realize they're sacrificing their people one by one, lighting themselves on fire hour by hour. They're going to do it in order to get Russell Prime back or whatever. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they show the first girl getting, you know, burning herself alive, and Indra was shook, and I was a little surprised, man. Indra's a badass. She's seen some shit in her life, man. I mean, I know she's good, you know, but and doesn't want someone to burn themselves alive, but she was pretty shook.
So I was on the Murphy train where it's like, just let them.
Yes.
And we kind of had this conversation, and Luke was more, but, and then I played devil's advocate, and I'm like, we're the last humans on Earth, or what they think. So they think, like,
yeah, I mean,
no one
wants anyone to burn themselves alive,
yeah.
But it's not really, like, all you have to do is have one person be the leader, like Murphy, and then their whole plan is done.
What do you mean by that?
Like, if Murphy was Indra.
Sure.
And making the decisions right now, and Indra says,
go
do it. Fine, I don't care. Then they just all die.
And
but
that's my thing, is when they're having the conversation, Murphy says that. He says exactly what I asked out loud as I was watching the episode. I was like, why not just let them all kill each other? And then as soon as he says that, they kind of just brush it off, don't even give him an answer, moved on to Russell himself, Shade Hada volunteering to go talk to him. That conversation isn't brought up. I don't know. I'm saying they just let them all burn themselves alive. We're pretty much half peaceful in the universe. We're done with one storyline.
Yeah. So Nelson, the leader of the Children of Gabriel, actually tries to save one of the Faithful, gets burnt. To save the woman who does kill herself.
Good guy, Nelson.
Yeah, and I love that dude. I liked that a lot because he's the one who says, like, they might hate us, but they're still my people.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, like he said, his parents are one of them, you know?
So you're Nelson and I'm Murphy. Do you feel good about yourself? Doubt it.
I see both sides, but I was surprised by Nelson saving them, but happy that he was because these are human beings, and I think that
cockroach protocol,
anyone,
man.
Right, but anyone who isn't us, I feel like we think are bad, and I'm glad to see that they're not, you know?
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because if you think about it, if Nelson is on Murphy's side and they just let him burn, then Nelson gets what he wants, and they kill Shade Hada / Russell. You know, that's what, if he decided, you know, that's what he would get.
Yeah, that was weird to me, and it was also weird to me, did we see Alyssa this episode? Which she wasn't the person that burned herself alive,
no.
right?
No, I don't.
That's weird that they wouldn't have put the only named character of
besides
the faithful. Besides Trey, and she wasn't in any of the scenes, not the original or the later scene with Shade. That was weird to me.
Yeah,
budget stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. Guest actor.
So Amori is still recovering from the radiation, so of course Murphy has to be the one to play Daniel Prime and try and talk them down, but he's not supposed to go into the tavern. Indra's gonna walk him through, and Murphy sees that the next sacrificial lamb is going to be a child, so he busts right in.
Yeah, and I just wanted to real quick rewind. I loved his line where he says, the others better come back soon because I'm tired of being a hero.
Classic Murphy.
Murphy.
He's got a couple more hero scenes, I guarantee it.
So Zev, Daniel Prime's boyfriend, is the one who kind of finds him out and outs him, and they trick him to try and say the four pillars of whatever it is. So now this motherfucker is getting Murphy killed, but obviously he's not going
to
die.
And to me that was weird because why instantly wouldn't you think if you just prove that Daniel Prime isn't Daniel Prime, why wouldn't your next logical jump to be, let's go see if Kaylee Prime's actually a Prime?
And I said, like, the one thing you do when you're impersonating someone, like when Murphy was teaching Josephine how to be Clark, is you test them and you tell them everything they need to know. I feel like the four pillars of Sanctum are basic.
Well, that's like with Amori. She was studying, remember, earlier in the season, and Murphy was like, nah, I'm good.
Really?
Yeah, remember when Kaylee, she was reading the book early in the season?
We Are One, that's where the We Are One thing came from.
Right.
Yeah.
She was studying up, and Murphy was like, I'm not doing this.
Yeah.
I'm not feeling it.
Oh, that's a good catch. I didn't even, like, I forgot I had that memory.
If I'm Zev, I'm not questioning him on that. Because of that, I'm like, where did we first have sex?
That's what I was just going to say, is, personal. Like, studying aside, like, you can't fake a personal relationship with anyone, even how little. Like, they were there, like, what are you going to do? You don't know the name of anybody that's in that room. They've been living there for their whole lives. Like, what the fuck? How does this not...
Murphy the fuckboy goes, I guess you're wondering why I didn't call you back.
That was a great line.
That was a great line. So, moving forward, we get a hot boy shirtless Murphy. He's about to get burned alive, but then Russell and Amori to the rescue. We get this, like, cute little flirty line. Even in the face of death, they're flirting with each other. And like I said, Amori and Murphy are the greatest love story of our time. And then this is where we get the big reveal, which is the best part of the Sanctum storyline. Russell is saying, show me your fealty, and makes them kneel. And then Indra, you could just tell on her face, she's like, I've heard that before.
Yeah, Shade-Hada came in hot. Like,
he really did.
He just came in, knew what he had to do. He had to basically just dominate these people that are just faithful to him. And it was the second time watching the episode, like, the realization on Indra's face is just like, that was the best part of any Sanctum scene, almost probably for the whole season.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That was so cool and so smart of her.
And I thought it was really clever to speak in. We're all going to say at once what the grounder language is called. We're going to pronounce it. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Trigagazugle.
Nope.
Let you do that.
Trigagazugle. No, but it's like Trigagazugle. Something grounder speak. But she says, there's a spider on your shoulder, and he looks on his shoulder. And I know people might think that's a little corny, but I thought it was a really clever way of him recognizing it, because obviously Russell Prime wouldn't have, because I mean, it's not like he was like he just like slowly looked at his shoulder, but just the fact that he recognized the,
and the more I think about it, the more I'm just like starting to just accept that he would have fell for something so not gullible but kind of gullible, is at that exact time he already knew he had the leverage of, he can't be killed. Like, they can't kill him without basically destroying all of Sanctum, causing riots and stuff like that. He later says, you can't make me a martyr. Like, that's just going to backfire on you. So I guess the reason, like, him having that knowledge in his head made him just nonchalant. Like, I just hear in this other language, I'm fluent. Okay, you caught me. I don't care.
Yeah, so if they kill Russell, the faithful would revolt. And if the grounders found out about Shade-Hada, they would revolt. So they've kind of got these two...
They're in a little pickle.
But to me, I'm saying just fucking cut his head off and then deal with the deal with the faithful and let them, whatever they want to do, I don't care.
Yeah.
That's me, but that's not television. So we're going to have Shade Hater for maybe. Let's take a guess. How many more episodes do we have Shade Hater?
Oh, man. I swear, like, at some point I thought that I read in an article or something that this was only going to last a couple episodes.
So, really? It kind of is, because next episode is only Nakara, which is the ice planet.
Yeah,
like,
okay.
The way that they're doing it, full Bardo episodes, full. So, technically, yeah. Sanctum is only maybe 4 or 5 episodes, but it might span until
Yeah,
not,
I mean, I definitely...
9,
you didn't get there yet, but I definitely need the answers to what actually happens when the mind drive was taken out of his neck.
Yeah.
That's going to be, you know, we don't know exactly what that means for Shade Hata and Russell.
So to me, that just means, when he dies, he dies. There is no more Shade Hata in the mind drive, but he's still, I think he is both Shade Hata and Russell at the same time. I think that he has Russell's memory and stuff, because he wouldn't be able to fake it.
Okay,
this long.
So what you're saying now is that he's Shade Hata / Russell, but he's not immortal anymore.
I think that was the purpose of the scene.
It's,
I think we just have to take
the code
that
out.
We have to take that at face value, or else, like, you know, like, this could be open ended forever, and this is an end game. This is just getting. It's going to be, you know,
exactly
half the story,
right?
So yeah, and
yeah. I mean, while we're on the Sanctum talk, you know, I just want to bring this up real quick. Where the hell is Nikki?
Yeah. I agree. If anything, I think it makes sense that she wasn't in this episode, but she should have been in the last.
Yeah, I mean, the last episode, we have Clark, we have Raven, we have enough of stuff going on since that happened where, you know, she should be raising hell. I mean, even when Indra's walking through camp, like, even with Murphy or whatever, you would think that she's trying to talk to somebody to be like, what the hell just happened? I need revenge, or I want this, I want that. But she's just, you know...
Well, we did get from our interview with Chad Rook, who plays Hatch, he did tell us that Nikki has some explosions coming ahead. Like, this is going to, you know, she is going to revolt and start causing some unrest in Sanctum. But I agree. I didn't even realize that she was in the episode until you brought that up when we were talking. But
so I think they didn't, because when she is in the episode, it's going to be
her
a big,
focus.
Gigantic
right.
part
She'll
of the
be
episode.
The, yeah,
they
I
can't
agree.
Just like have her be like, hey, and then just like, not now.
Yeah, right.
Not
that's
now.
True.
We'll deal with you next episode.
That's true.
And
yeah.
We also know that, because this is still technically the same night as the last episode. How did we get that confirmation?
They say that you just stopped us for burning.
Exactly.
Shade Hata,
like earlier tonight. Yeah. And then, yep, exactly.
Yeah. And that's the episode. I mean,
wait, hold on. Okay. We got a couple. I just wanted to touch on the conversation that, Indra and Shade Hata have right before they take the mind drive out. He's kind of, at this point, he's just like playing a little bit of mind games, like talking to her about days on Earth when he was like actually when he was the commander for that short period of time. And then he says to her like, yeah, like I conquered Tree Crew. Like, were your parents there and stuff like that? Was just like a really cool throwback. And, you know, like Shade Hata was a direct cause of Indra's dad dying in battle, which is another reason that she should have a lot of contempt for him and like actually just want to, you know, mess him up.
You're right, and that you made a good point, because when we were watching, he was kind of explaining to me in my head, I thought Shade Hata was like 100 years ago. Like, I'm like, oh, he was just like a lore kind of like, oh, Shade Hata the Dark Commander. But Luke made a good point where he's like in everyone's relevant brain.
Within the last generation, right?
Yeah,
he had to be, because there's only been 100 years worth of commanders, because that's how long the apocalypse happened in the beginning of the series, you know? So there was like he knows Indra's family. He knows he killed Indra's dad. He caused Indra's mom to bend the knee to them, and that's how Tree Crew kind of got, you know, under Shade Hata's command.
Indra's been hard for forever. She's like, I thought my mom weak for kneeling, and then Gaia, she won't let Gaia like mourn Indra's, I don't know if it's husband or whatever.
Yeah,
guy's
so why
dad.
The hell is
like,
she getting upset when someone's burning themselves
yeah,
alive?
Yeah, it's so true.
But last point I wanted to make on that conversation was I made a big deal about Knight, who is the character, who is the grounder representative that was in Shade Hata's crew, a Shang crew or something like that, whatever.
I forget it.
And I made the point, I was like, why?
Sangeta crew.
Something like that. He's like, I made the point, I was like, why would he even care? But now, knowing that Shade Hata was really ruling 40, 50 years ago, maybe even less, like, that gives a little bit more credence to why Knight would have reacted that way, being like, yo, come on, like, he would have been our commander.
That's my
boy. He's still recent memory.
Yep. He might have been ruthless, but he was, you know, like, he was the guy.
He represented us, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
And then last conversation we get, which is just like a one-liner, is when the other members of one crew come in to take to do the surgery on Shade Hater's neck and take the mind drive out, we get the one like line from Jackson where he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna give him something to numb the pain." And Indra looks at him and he says, like, you know, like,
let him feel it for Abby.
Yeah. And then he just goes, fuck yeah, and just cuts his neck, right? And
he likes it, yeah. So he's a fucking sadist, like, loving that pain. We all good?
We're good.
All right, let's go to the best segment ever. Bang, kill, marry. Okay, we're doing new boy edition. So it's Nelson, Hatch, and Levitt.
Ooh,
jeez.
This is a good one.
Okay, are we taking it just at...
We're doing their characters.
Okay.
Yeah. You want me to start?
Start.
Okay, so I am banging Nelson because he's a hot boy.
You kill Chad, man. You better not.
I'm going to kill Chad and marry Levitt.
Oh, my God.
Because Levitt, I was into that. I like someone... Like, I liked that whole storyline really... Like
you said, you're marrying Levitt.
I'm marrying
Levitt in 2 seconds. I'll tell you that right now. You know he loves Octavia. He'll love me just fine. he saw Octavia's pure heart. So, man, that's tough. I'm banging Hatch because he's my boy. All right.
You guys already have a personal connection.
Yeah. Right. So. Yeah, I mean, actually, to be honest, like, I like Nelson. Like, he's a cool character, and he did get a little more development in this episode, but Hatch is our boy.
He's a little sexy. Nelson.
Yeah, and I'm going to do the same exact order as you right there. I'm definitely marrying Levitt, and I'm just going to say that he kind of just falls under that scientifically curious category of like Raven Gabriel, and Gabriel, so I'm all for that shit. Like, he's going to hold up a good conversation, you know, he's going to... Good to bring to the parents, whatever. All right, I'm marrying Levitt, and of course I'm banging Hatch. Are you kidding me? Chad Roque was just on our goddamn podcast.
I know. I love you, Chad.
Nelson's great too. I really
I'll bang Chad.
If it wasn't Hatch, I would have been banging that. Nelson though. So.
All right. Well, that does it for the episode. As always, we are going to be following season 7 of The 100 Weekly. Next up is episode 6, titled Nakara, which is the new planet. If you like what you heard, give Binchdown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe to our show on Spotify and the Apple Podcast app. Thanks for listening, y'all. And also, it's Binchdown TV. Did I say Binchdown TV? Or Binchdown? Just keep it. Who cares? No, you guys looked at me and
what?
I was like,
no,
like
you were fucking.